Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
IGN Gamescoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Today, I'm joined by Dan Stapleton, Justin Davis,
Scoop,
and Brian Altano.
Bleh!
Our topic today comes from one of our fans, Seamus O'Neill.
Seamus.
One of those.
I like that name.
Makes me think of the wee baby Seamus.
I think it's a strong name, personally.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Sounds like Shameless.
Recently my friends and I got on the subject of what we each thought was the most overrated game of all time. The question turned out to be a lot harder than we thought it would, and we had a lengthy discussion on the subject. My question to you would be, what are each of your answers for most overrated game of all time?
It's a really nasty question to ask a reviewer, because I mean, like, everybody's opinion is valid, you know. It's really which do you disagree with more? But I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean it's been rated badly.
Just it's a personal choice for what you believe. That's that caveat. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, well, it just depends on what I don't like.
Right.
Yeah. And
we
should also point out, just because we think a game is overrated doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad game.
Right.
It's just maybe something that is often praised that maybe doesn't deserve it as much as some other games.
Yeah, so, like, this video would not end with, like, IGN declares X the most overrated game of all time.
Unless.
So I'm going to start.
No, I'm going to start.
You're going to start.
Because this is my show.
All right.
I'm going to start with...
I'm terrified someone's going to say mine before I get to.
The highest rated game on Metacritic. The single highest rated game with a 98 on Metacritic, Grand Theft Auto 4.
Oh, you took mine.
Oh, no.
you took one of mine, but that's okay. That's
you have another feather in your cap.
Yes, I do. That's good. That's I'm actually...
IGN gave it a 10.
Yeah, IGN gave it a 10. A lot of people gave it a 10. Yeah. And I gave it a 10 after the first 4 hours I played it. And then I played 10 more. And I was like, this is not a 10 anymore.
Now, for me, like, I think it depends on how you look at that game. Because I agree that, like, the quests are not necessarily a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Like, some of them are pretty damn frustrating, in fact.
I like that you call them quests.
Yeah, me too.
Well, they're missions. Missions, whatever. Yeah. And not slaying orcs, so I guess they're not.
Doth thou haveth thy Grand Theft Auto sword? Findeth in the quest.
Yeah.
A medieval Grand Theft Auto would be pretty awesome.
Yes.
Right?
Would be awesome.
Can you get on that? Can somebody please?
Somebody make that.
You just kind of hijack a horse?
Yes.
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 Horse jack?
I mean, we already did a Western Grand Theft Auto, right? So let's do a medieval.
Yeah.
But point is, like I think the strength of Grand Theft Auto is not in its story or anything like that. It's just in the sandbox.
Nope.
Sure.
And I think the sandbox...
that disagrees.
For me, that is a 10 out of 10 sandbox.
It's a sandbox with no sand.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're
doing. There's nothing to do in that game outside of driving and walking.
Yeah, it's like you can throw darts on a date. It's not very fun.
You can get drunk and then take a cab.
There's a city full of buildings you can't enter. There are stores that you can only see from the outside. There's two banks in the entire game you can, like, walk into. There's a couple of clothing stores you can go in. But for the most part, you're driving through a shell of a world. And the driving isn't that great. Mm. The shooting mechanics suck.
Yeah.
So you're left with a bunch of things you can't do very well in a mostly empty world.
Even running,
10 out of 10.
Walking and running is really hard to do.
I never finished it. I just got burnt out.
Nobody finished it.
I wasn't.
Obviously, people finished it.
I will say for its time, it was beautiful and it was ambitious as fuck that it was this gorgeous and huge and it looked that great from top to bottom. Like, you could walk around that world and be like, this looks really good.
Yeah.
But then you really dug into it and you're like, there's not much here.
It just wasn't very fun to play.
Yes.
I disagree with the notion that it's an empty sandbox. I think there are a lot, like, the people in that city are fantastic to play with.
Sure.
That for me, the way they react to the mayhem that I cause is one of the big appeals of that game for me.
Well,
just to be able to do madness and have fun things.
And I agree, that stuff was awesome. And especially when we saw the first trailer for the physics engine they were running, where you just saw these cars smashing into people and they just melt and fly and just bend in half. And you could do a lot of that stuff in the game, and I loved it for that. But for the most part, like, you were driving around doing nothing.
and it still has that, it has frustrating game mechanics where, like, it's, you know, it'll be like, chase down this guy, he's getting away in his car, chase him down, oh, he got away.
Yeah.
All right, start it over again.
Restart the thing.
That's just like, I'm over
it. It wasn't even just restart the mission, it was restart the you driving to the mission to restart the mission.
We did let you skip those driving sections, but yeah, definitely.
I would add, though, that I think the multiplayer in Grand Theft Auto 4 is underrated.
Yeah,
I think it was awesome. I had so much fun playing.
Totally.
Cooperative
and it's got some incredible characters and some really cool story choices and stuff like that.
But the highest rated game of all time on Metacritic.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Wow. I would have thought Metroid Prime or Galaxy would be.
I would have said Ocarina of Time.
Yeah. Wow.
That's what I thought you were going to say, and I was going to leap over Dan and punch you in the mouth.
No, I would never. I love Ocarina of Time. I don't think that game is overrated.
Good.
But what were you going to say, Justin?
I was going to say, obviously, blatantly, Uncharted 3 is not a 10 out of 10. Greg Miller.
You're going to get hell for this.
Yep. I think like Greg's in the minority on that one. You know, like we
Uncharted
had this,
2 is so much better.
I agree. We had this, as, you know, we did a GameScoop panel live at PAX East this year, and it was on the best game of the generation, and Greg asked the audience, am I in the minority that Uncharted 3 is a 10? And the audience did not agree with Greg.
All right.
So my thing is...
Let's go then.
It's similar to GTA 4 where, you know, it's telling this interesting story and like that chapter you wander through the desert is like really memorable. The chapter where you're, these are spoilers by the way, but where you're young Drake are like really memorable. But they're just not that much fun.
Yeah.
Like just like GTA 4 is trying to tell a really interesting story at the expense of like, you know, the fun kooky sandboxness. Like Uncharted 2 and 1 to a lesser extent were like sort of fun. They had serious moments. Drake gets shot, almost dies. But like for the most part, they're just sort of fun Indiana Jones style adventures.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Three is dark.
Yeah, me too. I think 3 is a very good game, an excellent game. But I like 2 more.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it. By the way, the scene in the desert and the scene when you're young Drake, they're fantastic from a narrative perspective.
Yeah.
But once you're actually holding up and slogging through this desert, tired and thirsty, and nothing happens for 45 minutes. Sure. Until you get into this,
and people are shouting at the screen. People are shouting at the screen that, oh, that's the point. And like they're not wrong, but it just means like that's why I played Uncharted 3 once, and I played the other two several times.
Yeah.
I'm just like I don't want to experience.
I mean, a lot of people's favorite parts in the Indiana Jones movie isn't when he's teaching a class.
I think about Uncharted 3 as the Temple of Doom of the Uncharted series.
Oh,
I guess.
So the best one?
No,
get out of here!
Yeah,
that's a whole different. We're saving this.
Temple of Doom is amazing.
I know. Nope, that is, nope, I also nope, think nope. Temple of Doom is like too cool to.
Yeah, Temple of Doom is the best Indiana Jones by far.
Nope. No.
Yeah, it is nonstop amazing from top to bottom. Nope, I don't even
Temple
want to.
Temple of Doom is awesome.
It is. Thank you.
Yeah,
you
cut up with the
monkey
snake.
Brains.
That whole though, dinner scene.
Chilled monkey brains.
Especially because they're starving. They haven't eaten in so long. Just like Nathan Drake, who had a drink in the desert for a very long time.
Well, the analogy that I was getting at, I was surprised that you guys liked that so much. I thought most people didn't like Temple of Doom because it's darker than the other movies. It's darker and there's child slavery and it's like, oof, this is less fun.
I thought it was goofier, really. Like they went more over the top of the
short round. So
yeah, that's true.
The guy gets crushed in that like steamroller machine. He's like turban gets caught in it, gets sucked into it, and the blood comes over there.
The guy rips a beating heart out.
Yeah.
He's gotta put your hand in the thing with the bugs in it.
It's just not as much fun in Uncharted 3, I'm bringing this back around, when like you find out he's not even related to Nathan Drake, and then you're like, oof, that feels bad. Like, it turns out he like stole that name, and like his friends are all telling him to quit, and he won't quit. Like, he's really crazy about it, and I'm just like, man, I don't know. It's just not as good.
I agree. Dan, overrated game.
I've picked this one specifically to antagonize Justin.
what's it going to be?
All right.
I'm going to say
Angry Birds.
Nope. I'm gonna say Minecraft.
Okay.
All right. Overrated. Okay.
So, I love Minecraft as a toy. Like it is virtual Legos. That's fantastic. As a game,
yeah.
Like the game that's in again that's another one where it's a fantastic sandbox, not a great game.
Okay.
I think you can go and do the dungeon delving stuff, but you know it's very simple combat mechanics. Most of what you're doing is hitting something with a stick. It's not well paced. It's not.
You are describing the Elder Scrolls V Skyrim.
I disagree with that.
Hit things with a stick. Dungeon delving.
You
it's slow paced.
You know.
Well, I'm not saying the combat in Skyrim is fantastic, but it's better than Minecraft.
I thought Skyrim sucked, so that's just me.
I mean, I think so. Minecraft blew up. A lot of people don't understand why that game is so huge.
Right.
Why did it take over the world? Why did it make Notch? I think it's over $200 million.
Give or take, yeah.
But Minecraft blew up at the same era where Call of Duty and Uncharted and games like that ruled the gaming landscape, where they funnel you from one, like, they could not be more scripted. Uncharted, like, you jumped the wrong way, so now you die, and you do it again. Like, it's literally the most guided, the hand of the developer guiding you from place to place.
Yeah.
And Minecraft is a reaction to that. It's a response to that. Like, the degree of player agency, you can make this world look like whatever you want. You can do anything that you want in this game. You can build a giant underground, you know, Moria labyrinth. Oh, yeah. You can build towers.
You can make
sky.
Anything you want. You can't do anything you want.
Yeah.
I mean, you can in the sense that, like, you know, the world, you can wander off in any random direction. Like, that degree of player freedom, you know, now it doesn't seem as radical because Minecraft got so big that other games are doing this, like, building, crafting thing. But that wasn't really much of a thing before Minecraft.
But
like,
why does that make a fun game? If I get home from work and I just want to play a fun game and it's like, here's a field, go have fun. Build all the things to make fun with.
It's
I'm like, I don't want to do that.
It's not a game for everybody. It's a game where you have to make your
but
own
But it is
fun.
A game for a lot
it's
of a people.
It is a game for everybody. I mean, almost everybody's playing Minecraft.
I couldn't get into Minecraft either, but we're in the minority there, right?
Like, totally. It's a game where you have to define your own goals. So it's like the game doesn't tell you, hey, build a library, but I want to go out and build like this massive library. Like,
right, and for me, that is the difference between a game and a toy.
Yeah.
Is that a game... Is you know, creates obstacles for you, creates objectives for you. There's a goal. There's something trying to stop you from accomplishing that goal.
I disagree. You can make your own goals and have it still be a video game.
Well, it's a game that you have made for yourself.
Yeah,
it's like I give you a ball and a field, and then you start playing baseball. I haven't designed baseball. You designed baseball.
Yeah, but baseball's a game.
Right, but I gave you a physical
so
ball.
You made the game.
Right, you made baseball.
Those games don't work for me. I need like objectives to work towards, basically. When I'm dropped into a world and I'm not giving anything to do, I feel like paralyzed. That it's like, well, I don't know.
I totally agree. I love the art. I love the way things look when they're all built. And I want to see somebody make games out of Minecraft that have points and things to do in them. And you can drop it in front of me and
people
be like,
have.
Yeah, get to the tower and beat the king or whatever. And I'm like, sure, I'll do that. But when you're just like, here's a field and an axe. Oh, there's some things coming at night, but they don't really matter. You know, just build a hat or whatever. Then that's, you know, it's like, just not enough for me.
When I played Minecraft at first, it was brought to me as like, this game is amazing. Try it. Play this game. So I played it as a game. And I was underwhelmed because, like, I played it for, like, a weekend. And it's like, yeah, okay, I'm having some fun here. I'm driven to go and you know, acquire these materials and craft a better house. Eventually, I built a house suspended in the sky with, like, effectively suspended by a waterfall. And the only way you can fly, you can get up there is
waterfall
go up the
waterfall elevator.
Right. So, like, after I'd done that, it's like, okay, what am I doing? There's no more game here. I have, like, swords made out of diamonds. Like, there's nothing else
you gotta make.
So,
build Mega Man
right.
out of...
But, like
blue blocks for the rest of your life.
Exactly. So you like once you turn it and once you realize it's not a great game. It's a great Lego set.
Sure.
It's a fantastic
but
toy.
Does it claim to be anything else than that?
No.
I'm just not sure it's fair to claim it's overrated when it doesn't claim to be anything other than it is.
It's considered. Mm-hmm. It's rated as a game. Okay. And it's the same thing with Grand Theft Auto, I feel.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think, like, you can think about something like Animal Crossing is the same way. It's open-ended. You decide what you want to do in that game. I want to breed flowers. Another person wants to fill their, you know, insect book. Neither person's wrong. The game doesn't tell you what to do.
Well, here's a comparison for you.
No, that's completely, that's not true at all. You walk into the game and the guy goes, you have a house, you owe me money, go get money to give me money.
No, you
for
can
the
live
house.
In a tent if you want to. Nothing's stopping you from doing that.
Nobody wants to live in a tent.
Here's a comparison
We live
for
in
you.
San Francisco. A lot of people here live in tents.
Spore. Spore is a pretty bad game, I think.
Yeah.
But it has a fantastic creature creator. Like, I can play with that creature creator for hours and hours and hours. I gave it to my sisters-in-law, who were, like, you know, 10 at the time. And they played with that, like, just, I gave them just the creature creator, not the full game. It was very nice of them to not make me disappoint them with the full game. Mm-hmm. So I gave them the creature creator, and they played with it for a year.
Yeah.
Like, it is fantastic, but it's not a game.
Did they also make dick monsters, like everybody else?
I never saw a dick monster out of them, but, yeah.
Brian, since I stole your... your pick.
No, I mean, I totally agreed with yours. Mine is, and I'm a huge Zelda fan. Everybody knows that. But mine is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask.
Yeah,
oh,
me
no.
too.
It's
just me
oh,
too.
No.
Really?
I love that one.
Okay,
so, you and I have talked about this before.
Yeah, so for whatever reason, that game has never and will never truly click with me. It always feels like something, it feels like a student project after Ocarina of Time, where that came out and somebody was like, let's take all those parts and build this fake weekend Zelda where you have to keep repeating quests, you're on a 3-day cycle. The story's cool where it's like there's this moon coming down, impending doom, but there's, what, four, six temples in the entire game.
Yeah.
You're this weird Link in this weird town that you have no connection to with all these strange people. It feels like a side quest or like a second quest to Ocarina of Time, but not in like a good way. You know when you played the first Zelda and you're like, oh, they remixed everything and I don't know where anything is anymore. Yeah. That's how Majora's Mask felt. And I'm in the minority on this because I know many Zelda fans are like, that is one of the best Zelda games ever made.
It is a polarizing Zelda though.
Is it really?
It seems like you either love it or hate it.
Yeah, because I mean, every other Zelda game I've ever played, I'm in a temple and I'm like, I can take my time to beat this. And with that game, it's like, I better rush out and get the key and come back and change the time and then come back again and then get a mask that changes my character attributes. Like, it's so weird and not in a good way. There's a lot of weird Zelda games. I enjoy most of them. Majora's Mask just never did it for me. I think it's horribly overrated.
I agree. It's interesting narratively. It's actually, there's a thread running through all these games, except Minecraft, I guess, is the exception, where like it's doing an interesting thing with story, I think, at the expense of gameplay. Like,
yeah.
I played the game the first time and fucked up, and then I had to repeat everything I'd just done. And I'm like, that's not fun. Like, it doesn't feel good. Like,
you had to re-meet everyone for the first time dozens of times if you weren't playing it the right way.
And like, it's really stressful. And again, there's going to be people screaming at the television.
Good.
Saying,
I love Zelda games. I love them. I play them more than anybody in the office, probably. Majora's Mask was not good.
I just mean, like, they're going to say the point is that it's stressful. The world's ending. You know, you're supposed to feel that. But I'm like, that's not what I want to feel. Like,
that's not Zelda for me. Give me a field and a horse, and I can hang out. I can be like, I'm going to go check out that thing over there. Maybe there's something over here.
Yeah, like, it's like, nope, you got to go. Time. You got to get going. You can't see what's over there. You don't have time to do that.
It's a Zelda game with a timer on it. And to me, that's completely stupid. Those are two things battling each other.
You guys are not alone. I know a lot of people agree with you. I liked Majora's Mask a lot. If you look at all the Zelda games, a lot of them are very similar. They feel very similar, and I start to get tired of that. I like that Majora's Mask was different. I like that it's kind of weird and creepy.
It's dark.
Yeah,
I mean, that's cool. It's totally got that stuff going for it, which I really appreciated. Like, when you first meet the mask salesman, and this guy's demented.
Yeah.
Like, he's like Jigsaw or something like that.
I like Nintendo being weird and creepy.
Yeah, cool. Me too. I don't know. I think we've talked about this before, but I did say once that I would give that game another chance.
I think we talked about on GameScoop before that we should play it again, and then we didn't do it.
Yeah, the last time I went on GameScoop and shit on Majora's Mask.
When Nintendo wants to remake it in HD and put it on 3DS or something.
Put it on 3DS. I'll give it another shot.
Thank you for the topic, Seamus. Lots of good, interesting picks here. Viewers, let us know your picks for the most overrated games of all time. Let us know in the comments on Twitter, and stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Ryan, Justin, Hipster Justin, and Greg Miller.
I'm running for Congress. I'd like the third seat in the District of Columbia.
I'm sorry about my Don Matrick hair today.
It's okay. We all have our roles to play. It's good. We're going to talk about something interesting here. This comes from one of our viewers, Cezanne.
Cezanne?
Yeah. Pretty good name.
Cezanne?
Nope, it's not that.
Okay.
All right.
Is it say anything?
What I said.
We'll move on.
Cezanne says, I was thinking about system launches of the past couple of generations, and the games that came out were not memorable at all. Talking
Correct.
About launch games, right? Mm-hmm. So he says, my question is, are we getting excited this November for what we will consider garbage in 2 years? or are these all veteran developers creating games with a track history of success?
As usual, the truth lies somewhere in between.
Right?
Yeah. You don't remember that PS2 chestnut FantaVision?
So I would say,
talk about FantaVision.
For the major home consoles, I can't speak to Vita or 3DS as well, but I'd say the last killer app at a launch was Halo 1 for Xbox One. Mm. I don't think the 360, I don't think the PS3 had any games at launch, day one. They were like, I need to buy this system right now.
Right. I think that's a worthy point. I know that, I think Rich used to make the case, I think, that I don't even bring that up because I'm not right. But for PlayStation, for sure, for PlayStation Vita, Colin and I think a lot of people, if you look at that lineup. That was a strong lineup, but it didn't move units even in a weird spot, right? Because you want a game, when you have a system launch and you want, there's only going to be a few games out, to be the standout game, to be the one everybody remembers like a Halo, that takes something super special.
It does. It's tough. But at the same time, to the reader's point, it's these are veteran developers, and everything, like we saw this, I think we saw this with 360 and PS3 this gen, everything was pretty safe. Like,
right.
The 360 lineup was, it was very good. There was Call of Duty 2, there was Condemned, there was Project Gotham Racing 3, one or two others.
Peter Jackson's King Kong.
Yep.
Not a launch title, not a day one launch title. It came out a month later in December, but yeah, there were some really good games, but nothing you were like, you'd tell all your friends, like, you need to buy this now.
There was Geometry Wars.
Right.
Yeah, I guess even that true. Was
that it. Was within PGR3, which is arguably the possibly the best of the launch titles for 360.
But, and that's what, I mean, when we talk about PS4 and you talk about Xbox One, and I try to explain to people why we're excited for this, they go, oh, cool, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, and it's got, you know, it's going to have 2,000 friends on PlayStation 4, and this will connect to your TV. And people are like, cool, what games does it have? And you're like, well, Titanfall looks good, but that's not coming out on day one. And I'm really excited for Infamous, but that's in February. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these.
I mean,
these
you think, like, we're excited to play Watch Dogs, right?
Right.
But then if you already have a PS3 or an Xbox 360, you can still
you can
play
it. Buy it. Like, this is the big question, is how much different or how much better or superior are, you know, the ports, or not ports, but the next gen versions of these games going to be? You know, stuff like Battlefield, stuff like Watch Dogs, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, like. Is it worth $400 or $500 to get Assassin's Creed 4 on a next-gen console?
I think Battlefield is a good case where there's going to be a massive discrepancy between the two. But something like Watch Dogs and AC4, maybe not so much.
Watch
Dogs
has got to be.
I mean, everything does it, though?
I mean, that's what we don't know. And like, and that's what I said on the live stream yesterday for Call of Duty Ghosts, right? It was just like, these are cool features. What is the parity between systems? Like, what are you going to see on PS3 versus PS4, Xbox One versus Xbox? And it reminds me, you're talking about veteran developers, right? It reminds me so much of when Madden came to 360. And there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hands down, the better version of Madden that year was on Xbox, period. The original. I don't know how you say it anymore.
OG
the original Xbox. And the Xbox 360 version was a totally watered-down, pretty
version. It was stripped down. It was very stripped down. And they seem to be avoiding that this time. Both
that we know of.
That we know of, but... Yeah, it's funny you say that, Greg, because I was just going to bring up the sports games, because NBA 2K14 and the return of NBA Live, what will come of it, we don't know yet, but NBA 2K14 and Madden are sort of two, really just multi-million, two of the biggest selling games every single year, and they are getting day one launch titles for both systems, and those could be markedly better than the current gen counterparts, at least in the visuals department.
Sure. I think companies have gotten better about, like, that transition, that console transition gets a little bit smoother each time. It used to be like a hard break. These are the new consoles. Well, these are what all the games are coming out for. And then last gen, there was like a good year, 18-month overlap. And now I think it's going to be even longer. I think we're going to very slowly and steadily.
Part of that, too, was the huge, we're not taking as big a leap this generation as we did last time around, going from standard def to high def.
Yeah.
All new engines had to be rewritten. You know, this time, EA is doing their Ignite sports engine, but we're seeing a lot of games more just sort of iterate on their current technology and slowly maturing it into next gen, whereas... To your point, Justin, last time around, you had to just start from scratch.
Well, we also, I mean, it's way too expensive for someone to make a game that's next-gen only. There are a few exceptions. There are a few next-gen only games, but generally...
Most of them are first-party, though.
Yeah, generally speaking, for a game to even remotely have a chance to make its budget back, it has to be on the PS3 and 360 and PC, where there's already millions of
games. Yeah, we saw Thief announced a while ago. The Thief reboot was originally going to be a next-gen only title, and then they must have... An accountant must have gotten a hold of that, a hold of that situation and went...
That's gonna be someone at Square Enix.
No, we better go ahead and put out current gen versions of this too.
Even to that point, you think about when you know the latest Rayman was gonna be a Wii U exclusive,
right?
And like,
same
thing. You're like, well, let's actually recoup some of the costs here and make this happen.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if so obviously Assassin's Creed 4 is both versions, but maybe even next year's version. You know, that might also you might still get a 360.
Oh,
PS3
I would bet on it. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. You see that? It takes a long time. It takes years even for developers to get comfortable with developing for these systems, right? And really learn how to get the most out of them.
And that's why so many of these first run launch games are like, okay, that's great at the time, but you don't look back and go, man, Resistance Fall of Man was the first person shooter. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if you look at the best games of the generation, I don't know, games like Bioshock, Uncharted, Mass Effect 2, like, you don't see those at the beginning. At the launch.
I mean,
but like, what if they could, right? Like, what if they did? I know. What if they were like Xbox One and they had like a Bioshock quality game ready to go at launch?
Yeah, you know, that'd be nice.
Well, it's like I'm hyped about games like Rise. Like, I think it looks really cool. I want to play it, but I don't see that, you know, 6-7 years from now, that being like the game that we all, you know, they're like, yeah, that's the Xbox One.
They can't all be Smuggler's Run.
No, we have, you know, we have a list of confirmed day one games for both consoles. You know, a lot of, like, we've been talking about ports or upgraded versions.
The lists
of
are very, very games. Similar to
They're
one
very
another.
Very similar. There's right. lots of overlap. PS4 has a few more exclusives like Killzone Shadowfall, Knack.
Boom! Knack! System seller. Mark Cerny's back, bitches.
What is that?
You got Rise, you got Dead Rising 3, you've got Dead Forza.
Three,
so it's, yeah.
Is Dead Rising 3 a launch?
Yeah, it is.
Ooh, good. Okay. Justifying my purchase of an Xbox
One. And actually, that is probably number one on my list right now.
So what are we, Damon, are we going to go over what we're all actually planning on buying?
We can.
Okay. I'd like to know. I'm curious.
Okay. I have my PS4 pre-ordered with Watch Dogs.
Yeah.
That's all I've got so far.
Me too. I have a PS4 pre-ordered with Watch Dogs, the exact same deal, and I'm probably going to pick up Assassin's Creed 4 as well. We were burned. I'm so on that franchise, but I just love pirates too much. I can't. You can sail around the seas and be a pirate and customize your pirate ship. I'm like, all right.
I've been saying Assassin's Creed 4 is like, I thought I was out, but they pulled me back in.
Won't get fooled again.
Yeah,
and it's like, we'll see.
Yeah,
I mean, it's good.
I've got both pre-ordered. I would say Forza and Dead Rising on the first party front for Microsoft. The 1666 isn't a day one launch title, right? So that's the PS4 game I'm most excited about so far. But yeah, then on the third party side, definitely Watch Dogs for sure.
Yeah, for me, I have them both pre-ordered. Now that I know it, Dead Rising will be purchased right away.
And on
Watch
PS4,
Dogs for sure.
DC Universe Online.
DC. I mean, you want to talk about the greatest games of the generation? I guess this is finally the definitive launch title game you could buy.
This is the only one
you need to have. The greatest MMO of all time on theoretically the greatest system of all time with 2,000 friends and Vita integration.
Yeah, so Cezanne asked if we're getting excited for maybe no reason. People were more excited about the potential that comes with a new console, right? Like, you're going to have this thing for years and years. You're going to be playing so many great games over the next 5 to 10 years. Like, that's what people are excited about.
Not to sound like a crotchety old man, but gosh, guys, remember back in the day when there was a killer launch? A launch, killer app with every launch.
And it was packed in with
Super
the system.
Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario World, Sonic the Hedgehog, and it was just...
I mean, you could argue that the Wii, had Wii Sports, that moved.
Wii Sports.
People bought it for Wii
even
Sports.
Even Twilight Princess could be argued, even though it also came out for GameCube. Yeah. It's a borderline
Wii
one.
Sports and Twilight Princess was a great, one-two really, casual,
you've got your, like,
gamer,
hardcore and casual
gamer.
Right
and yes, Halo 1, but yeah, it's...
Yeah, I mean, you point out, I know this, for a lot of people, maybe they didn't like that the Wii Zelda that much. We've talked about, it was really just an upgrade.
It
was still a new console launching with a Zelda. How could you not be excited for that at the time?
Yeah.
Little did we know it would be all wolf digging and fringe fingers. You don't even know what's that.
And how long is this game? It's like 70 hours long.
No, I mean, we definitely, no one's spending $400 or $500 for what's available day one. They're buying it knowing that there's going to be all those experiences in the months and years.
And arguably, they're buying it more for the non-game things, just the system potential, like the 2,000 friends and the game DVR functionality, and all the social sharing stuff.
I just like, we're all, I guess I don't want to speak for you. Me personally, I'm a big enough nerd that I just like playing around with new hardware and new technology. Yeah. Like, I don't own a Vita, but I've been borrowing an IGN Vita. And like, it's not even about the games library. It's just about playing around with it and feeling it. And I like checking out new tech. And so it'll be exciting to have, new consoles in my entertainment system.
We got some tech over here.
This fall is going to be very, very exciting.
Hopefully we're going to get release dates for these things.
Maybe next week. Right?
next week at Gamescom. I'll be there.
How sure are we that Microsoft
Not
is
at gonna, all sure.
Not at all sure, okay.
I think they're both trying to position as soon as possible. I'm sure Sony is trying everything they can to hit October, since Microsoft is November. Because why wouldn't you? Of course you would. So, and I'm sure Microsoft is trying to get as early in November as possible. They've already scaled back from 21 countries in 2013 to 13. So, I stand by my prediction that the Xbox One will launch on November 5th alongside Call of Duty Ghosts. But that's a really good point.
You think Sony will be a week earlier, maybe?
I think Sony's going to go, within a week or two in either direction, but probably on the earlier side.
I agree.
If I had to guess.
It's unbelievable that, I guess we would have to go back and, check the tape, as the kids say.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that we don't have dates. Like, these are a couple months away, and we don't have dates yet. Like, that's not normal.
Didn't that happen with the Wii U, though? Didn't they not give the date for Wii U till pretty late?
This is what, now my memory is...
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Like, my memory is that we usually get dates at E3, but that could totally not be the case. It just seems crazy that we're 2 months away and we don't have dates yet.
It's exciting, though.
Yeah.
It is.
Thanks, Adam. Stay tuned for more from IGN GameScoop. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Greg Miller.
Ahoy!
Marty Sleva.
Hey.
And Justin Davis, Scoop. Who's very upset because he just got schooled in an online game of Hearthstone.
I did.
You lost IGN $2.
Yes.
I did. I was playing an arena match. It did not go my way.
And the funny thing is, you thought you had him.
I
came over to sit down, and you're like, I've almost beat
so
this guy.
He was so cocky about it.
He had nine health. Cocky, I got him down to like, 9-6 health, and then he just hung out there. He couldn't.
I guess that rubber banding.
Couldn't put him away.
It's like Mario Kart. So much out of red shell.
We're not going to talk about it, but Hearthstone, you give a thumbs up?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. We are going to talk about the date of November 15th, 2013. The day that The Wolf of Wall Street is in theaters.
Is that really the date?
No. That is.
That's awesome.
Wait, which one's The Wolf
That's
of
the
Wall
new Scorsese
Street.
Movie.
New Scorsese movie. Oh, yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah, okay. Damn, now I got choices on what I'm going to do.
I know.
No,
it's also the day of the PlayStation 4.
Oh, right. Trophies.
So it's going to be a busy
Finally
day.
Finally play DC Universe Online the way it was meant to be played. It's stunning HD, DD.
It's a Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is also the day of the week that the PlayStation 3 came out, if I'm
right. That's right. No, that's 100% right. Good job.
Sony announced their date first. We're still waiting on the date for the Xbox One. We thought maybe Microsoft would announce it this week at Gamescom. Now it's seeming more like they won't. They've already had their press conference and their media showing. So
you think there's going to be an event for them later on, or this is going to be an announcement?
There's no, unless they do it either at PAX or TGS. I can't see them doing it at TGS.
No, I don't think they're doing anything.
Yeah, but it better be an event. It would be weird if a press release just came out like, oh, by the way, it's coming out on November 20th.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Like, the date itself, I don't see as being that huge of a deal. We know it's going to be pretty close to PlayStation. I mean, I don't think they need to have like a big event.
The big deal is if it's before or after.
Right.
The number one story on IGN yesterday.
Yeah.
Seems like a pretty
big deal. No, I mean, the date is a huge deal, but now that we know one date, like we know their Xbox is going to be right around the same time. I mean, like whether it's November 8th or November 22nd, like
I think it's a big deal, honestly.
I mean, you know, Sony would love to be out in front of Xbox, right? And I think.
Does it matter who goes first?
I think it does.
Yeah.
Because people have already pre-ordered them.
Right, but there's still a ton of people who, the story I always come back to is the Ryan McCaffrey story after E3, where he predicts that Xbox One's going to be launched alongside Call of Duty Ghosts.
Which is what day again?
That's November 5th. Yeah. And so, like, that's an excellent point of, like, if you're just some guy who only buys Call of Duty, you walk in to buy Call of Duty, and they're like, oh, and it's you can get it in Super HDDDD over here. And they're like, oh, my God. Blah.
And we've all, I think all of us have been to that point where we're kind of like, no, we'll wait to buy something. And then all of a sudden it's out, and we hear the hype. We're all talking about it in the office. You go into Best Buy. You see it. And you're like, ah. Shit. I guess I should buy this.
I almost bought a Wii U when everybody was tweeting about the Wii U that day.
And so if you only have $500, maybe the first one you walk into the store and see will be the one that you end up buying.
Well, I mean, for that Call of Duty player, right, they're going to come in and they're going to say, I've heard about the Xbox, right. Do my friends carry over? Yeah. Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, and it's okay. And they buy and they don't even think about that. Yeah. There's a price difference for this, or they've gone back and forth on policies.
And say you're excited for, like, next-gen Assassin's Creed Black Flag or Watch Dogs, and, you know, if you're able to play those on the 15th on PS4, or you have to wait till the 29th to play them on Xbox One,
right?
Maybe you take the dive first for those 2 weeks.
29th would be Black Friday.
Whoa.
Black Friday.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason the PlayStation news it surprised me a little bit, because we were hearing rumors that it was going to be later. It's like PlayStation had been nailing everything. You know, they came out of E3 so strong. All the news has been so strong from them. And we were starting to hear people say, man, like, they might be launching early December. Like, they're just not quite ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, comes down to supply, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I still think it's kind of crazy that North America and Europe are getting this well before Japan.
Yeah.
Japan does not have a release date.
That's crazy.
They were very clear at E3 that we are launching this holiday this year in these two territories.
And that shows that they're definitely feeling heat from Microsoft, because Microsoft is, I'm sure, I actually don't know about their Xbox One plans in Japan, but, you know, it's the same story it's always been. They've struggled there significantly.
Right.
Sony sort of feels like that's a territory they can sleep on.
That's money in the bank, right? Yeah. No matter when they put it out, people are going to buy it.
Yeah, Microsoft also came out, I think it was last week, and said that I think they originally promised 21 different territories.
Right. Scaled it back to 13.
Scaled it back to 13. And granted, it was like Russia and then a lot of kind of...
Lots of rumors of manufacturing problems, chip yield problems
but
on the
also
Xbox
maybe
One.
That is them pulling back so that they can launch like with force in America and England and Germany you know, earlier. So I don't know. Yeah. That November 5th, that would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's... It'll be a big deal, I think, if it can hit with Call of Duty. Especially the fact that the Call of Duty reveal event right for multiplayer was brought to you by Xbox.
Yeah,
and all they talked about was Xbox.
Yeah,
Yeah, and now they're doing the opposite. Oh, I think I'm right about this, but aren't all GTA things PS3? Which I know that's not next gen, but it's interesting to see companies
do
their marketing.
GTA things?
The same way that all Call of Duty marketing
so far has been on that. They announced the bundle, the headset.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see, you know, third parties and console makers pony up.
But that's one of those, like, Call of Duty has always kind of been, I associate with 360.
Right.
And I associate GTA with PS2. So, like, that's just kind of how that works with me.
I mean, when they said during this conference and blah, 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 Grand Theft Auto 5, I was like, oh, like, if they were going to say anything, like, they have a week of exclusivity on or something, I was like, what? And then, no.
I think the reason this maybe isn't quite as big a deal as it could be is because they are doing better upgrade programs this time around. Or that's actually never something that I've seen before in video games, where a lot of big games are launching before the next-gen consoles. So at GameStop, you can trade in like the Xbox 360 version of Assassin's Creed, and for $10 get the Xbox One version.
Yeah, that's pretty cool because it may come out a month before the
Xbox
One.
And so it's like that's a really painful like those transition can be painful at times. Like people really really want these games, but they're gonna get the next gen consoles, don't want to have to rebuy them. And so
that's big with Call of Duty too, because they said that you're like all your stats and all that garbage is gonna transfer over to you. Not garbage. I just
hi everybody.
That stuff.
I'm in charge of Call of Duty. I want to tell you all your stats. And garbage will transfer from the Xbox.
I guess you guys have won me over, and you're right that if you know the Xbox can come out, it finally happened. Justin's admitting he's wrong about something.
You just take off the mic and leave.
That would be a really, really nice 10 days for the Xbox One. Yeah. That would have over the PS4.
So if there isn't stock in stores available, then it doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah, but see, it's nice, but I think it's less nice because they're really doing things to soften that transition. If you're going to get a PS4, like, fine, play Call of Duty on your PS3 for a few more days and get the new one for $10. Like,
it's also kind of funny, though, that this is very topical right now, but, like, in a year, this is going to be the most dated, like, inconsequential game scoop that we've ever recorded, because it's going to be like, well, whatever that week or two was.
We've done
like,
a lot of inconsequential games.
The PSP Go, it can't fail.
Sony announced they've already sold over 1 million pre-orders of the PlayStation 4.
That's crazy.
I think
including
that's...
two to Greg Miller.
See, and that's what I'm talking about. Like, let's be clear here.
Wait, why do you have two?
He has two Amazon accounts.
I didn't realize I had two Amazon accounts.
Why
so
do you have two
I logged
Amazon
in
accounts?
And
I do too.
I didn't pay attention to what I was doing, I guess. So I have two Amazons, all right? Everybody's not that crazy.
I have two Amazon accounts that are tied to the same email, and which one I get logged into is determined by what password I put in.
Yeah.
How does that make sense for anybody?
Yeah, see, you guys got weird problems.
Yeah. Well, it's not really a problem. I was like, oh, I got two. Good deal.
My wife and I both have Amazon Prime for no reason.
Oh, that's silly.
It ships doubly fast then, right?
Yeah.
It arrives yesterday now.
Instantaneous. I like that.
Pretty good. So, do we want to make a prediction? Let's just make a prediction. Then we can see if we're right.
Oh, we're going to put this in a time capsule?
Yeah.
All right.
And it's okay to pick the same dates. But I think November 8th is the Friday of the week that Call of Duty comes out.
I'm going to say November 5th.
You think it comes out on a Tuesday?
On the nose with Call of Duty.
Go to the Tuesday launch for Xbox One.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to say the Sunday before Black Friday, which is...
That'd be the 22nd.
Second. Yeah, something like
that. A week after PS3.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm saying November 12th. That's the Tuesday before the PlayStation comes out.
Oh, this is so...
Why do you guys think it would come out on a Tuesday?
You're already going to the store to get games.
Yeah, because Tuesday's the day the games come out.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're right. That's my prediction. I'm not taking it back.
Right.
But games, consoles are a little bit different. Like I think the Wii launched on a weekend.
Sunday.
And
a weekend.
GameCube.
Yeah, and with that, stay tuned for more from IGN GameCube. Welcome back to GameScoop, everybody. I am your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined now by Dan Stapleton,
hello.
Justin Davis,
Scoop,
and Greg Miller.
Brat, brat!
And we're going to talk about The Elder Scrolls Online.
Are we now?
Which just this week it was announced that it would have a $15 a month subscription fee that's on top of its $60 price tag for the game.
They are partying like it's 2004, I gotta say.
Highly unusual today, isn't it? Like,
yes.
Most, what MMO out there besides World of Warcraft and EVE Online isn't free to play?
Final Fantasy is about the only one.
Yeah.
14?
Yeah.
A Realm Reborn.
Yes.
And yeah, it's about ready to launch again. That's going to be a subscription game?
Yeah, it's also a subscription.
And WildStar just announced it would have a fee as well. But they're doing something similar to EVE where you can buy it with in-game money if you accrue enough.
Well, so I don't know, maybe this isn't as unusual as I thought.
It's unusual.
It's very unusual. I would say, like, World of Warcraft, it's obvious that that game's going to be free-to-play eventually. And so it's really just Final Fantasy and Elder Scrolls are the only two. Those are the three big ones. I guess I didn't know about WildStar.
I mean, the fact is that any game that costs this much to develop needs a huge audience to support it. And to support what Star Wars The Old Republic ran into was that they were unable to produce content fast enough for paying subscribers to consider it worth it. And if EA couldn't do it, I don't see how ZeniMax can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
no, go.
We both mean something. There were buddies of meaning things. But now, of course, what I'm going to talk about is the ultimate MMO, DC Universe Online. And DC Universe Online did the same thing where it launched at $60, and then there was a $15.
That was a $60 game.
It was, yeah. And if you remember, it sold out. Like, there was a big deal. It was hard to get. People really want it hit, and people thought it was something new and wanted to play it, and they were really into it. And that install base was enough to keep them afloat long enough for, I forget, was it 6 months to a year? They went free to play as well. But what they said, at least, is it wasn't that they were like hemorrhaging money. It was just like, this is time and this is what, you know, we've always wanted to do. But to make that initial investment back, right, we buckled down and did that. And I think with a name like Elder Scrolls Online, like, that's the next MMO I'm excited for. That's sure. The next one where I'm like, yes, I want to do that.
What you're talking about right there is exactly what happened to Star Wars. Yeah. Like, they went out there, they did huge numbers right away, and then it tapered off because people got to the end of the content that was there. And the, you know, the content in there, the story content in The Old Republic is really good.
It's really good. Mm-hmm.
But there's only so much of it. And once you burn through it, there's nothing else to do. And why am I still paying if they can't generate enough content for me to play for a month every month?
But, like, their content pipeline was crazy, and that doesn't mean that, you know, ZeniMax Online's content pipeline has to look like that. Maybe they have, you know, a better way, a better plan for getting content out quickly. The Elder Scrolls, or excuse me, Star Wars, these are two separate problems. Like, Star Wars' problem was they couldn't get content out fast enough to satiate the users and keep them paying that fee every month. That's because it was so high quality, the voice acting was so good. Like, it was BioWare. It was a BioWare game through and through. Maybe ZeniMax Online won't have that problem. Maybe
their game will be crap, and it'll be easier to put out things.
I don't know. It's like BioWare thought that it could produce content like that.
I mean, you can go back to an old Game Scoop, and I said I don't see how that game is going to continue to have expansion packs and new content drops.
Elder Scrolls or
Star Wars?
Okay.
Because it's exactly what ended up happening. I'm like, they released this really, really, really high quality game, and it turned out it was really hard to release new content, you know, quickly of that quality.
So all of us that have seen Elder Scrolls Online come away very, very positive.
Well, right. It's People improving. Really yeah, like it was the initial review was not very positive at all, actually. Okay. But it's getting every time people see it, the game's coming together. Okay. Like it seems to.
But then the question that you posed to me when we were talking about this earlier this week, Dan, is: has Elder Scrolls Online just committed suicide already? Like, did it? Like, even before it's out, it's not supposed to be out until next year. Adding a subscription fee, you know.
I think it's taking a huge, huge risk. I mean, it could potentially pay off, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Mm. I don't think it's suicide. I think they're going to be okay. I think this is coming at it from Dan. He comes from PC land, where the, you know, things are different and free to play is super successful and this, that, and the other. Whereas I think gamers are used to console gamers who they're appealing to. The reason I'm excited for this game, right, is the fact that I will be able to play it on my console. I'm excited and I don't mind buying the $60 game and paying the $15. Because again, console mindset is, I'm going to play it and I'm going to stop paying for it at some point. And then either it goes free to play or they put out a new expansion and I'm back in and I'm super stoked for it.
Right, but if you play it and then stop paying for it, then ZeniMax is screwed. Because if everybody stops paying for it, they're done.
Sure.
I mean, I think, so you guys know me. You guys know me well. We're friends. And the viewers at home know that I sometimes have very strong opinions. Can be very stubborn, don't like to be swayed. This one, for once, I'm right down the middle on it. Like, I really don't know what to think. On the one hand, obviously, I've talked about how I'm not wild about free-to-play games.
the model of $15 for all you can eat. You didn't read off the guy's quote, but he said...
Yeah, I was planning to do that, and then I threw the paper away.
I can still do it.
But I mean, he basically says it allows them to deliver the package.
The quote is, charging a monthly subscription fee means we will offer players the same game we set out to make and the one that fans set out to play.
Yeah. But don't you remember what the BioWare doctors were saying in the lead up to...
They're gone!
They're making beer now.
This is like the same stuff they were saying, which is that, like, oh, this subscription fee allows us to do all the stuff we want to do, and free to play is great for what it does, but subscription lets us do this higher quality experience that people really want, and they failed.
I mean, this is why I'm split down the middle. The idea of a $60 game with the $15 fee on top of that seems crazy in 2013. It seems like no game has successfully been able to pull it off, MMO, in years and years and years. They've all had to go free to play. And so part of me is like, yeah, they have committed suicide. Another part of me thinks Elder Scrolls is a huge deal. Mm. This game is shaping up really, really nicely. And I think if this game comes out and gets great reviews, it gets nines, people are really loving it, that maybe they can pull it off. Yeah. Like, that's why I'm, like, totally on the fence on this one.
Yeah, like, if the stars all align perfectly, then yeah, like, if it is an amazing game and there's nothing wrong with it and it has tons and tons of content, you know, what I think will be the make or break factor for it is if the end game multiplayer, the PvP, if that is sustainably awesome, then people will stay with it.
But
if they get to the end and there is nothing else to do, or if the multiplayer is not very well balanced, and they do have very ambitious multiplayer plans, or, you know, their PvP plans.
I don't know how developers can continue not building end games into their MMOs.
Right.
Like, again, it's very easy for me to sit here in a couch and be like, let me explain.
I don't know why these developers aren't thinking of this problem.
Let me explain to you what you're doing wrong with your MMO. But, yeah, I mean, in all seriousness, you do see that mistake over and over again. People love a game, they get to the end, there's nothing left for them to do, so then they unsubscribe. Like, that happens.
That happened to the Old Republic. I mean, people got to the end of the story content that BioWare had poured its heart and soul into, trying to make that good, but not realizing how quickly people would burn through it.
But I mean, maybe that's just, so you paid $60 to get the game, and you get one free month, and maybe it takes you 3 months to get through it, or, you know, however long.
That's very optimistic.
Well, but sure. I mean, the point is, you're still going to get $75 or $90 from somebody. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah. It's a lot, but these games cost a huge amount of money to develop. Huge amounts.
And console gamers, you know, they complain about every dollar that they have to spend, right? Yeah. And so let's say you pay $400 for your PS4, $60 for the game. Mm-hmm. Now you have to pay an extra $15 a month, and you have to pay for PlayStation Plus to play this game online.
So is this one of them that'll have to be that way?
Well, that's the deal. If you want to play online,
But DC Universe Online isn't in that thing. Like, multiplayer, what they were talking about. I'm just throwing it out there for clarity's sake, even though this muddies the water even more, I guess. But
I'm actually not sure. I think some games that you pay for separately can be excluded from the PS Plus.
Okay. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
And here's one thing that you have a very good point earlier that.
See you guys later.
Good job, Greg.
We nailed them.
You had a very good point there that this is an MMO coming to an audience that is not really into MMOs or hasn't had access to them very much in the past, and there could be a lot of interest there for people that haven't already soured on the subscription model. However, the number of PlayStation 4s and Xbox Ones that are out there at the time this launches will not be enormous.
Right, good point. Yeah.
I mean, this is really, I don't know, it's a tough one to predict. I feel like if someone would be like, Justin, write an essay on why this was a great idea, I could do it. And if someone said, write an essay on why this was a terrible idea, I could do it. It's like, it's all of Tamriel, it's the whole world of Elder Scrolls, that's incredibly appealing, but it's not being done by Bethesda, it's being done by a different studio, you know, ZeniMax Online. So it's like, for every point, there's like a counterpoint that it's like, this game for me is a toss-up.
Skyrim became a $100 game. Eventually,
yeah.
But that was, you know, if you bought all the extra content.
Well, at the same time, it's coming down, but depends on when you buy it.
If you bought it at launch and you bought all the extra content, over a couple of years, it becomes a $100 game.
Yes.
But Elder Scrolls Online becomes a $100 game in 3 months.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then they want you to spend even more.
Yeah, and that's after if you've already bought if you just bought a $500 console, $400 console in your case.
Would have been smarter if they made the game free to download. And then they just started, you just pay a $15 monthly subscription fee.
Yes.
Right? Why do they also need that $60 up front?
I mean, it could be because of Dan's point that maybe there's not a wealth of content. Yeah. It's like maybe if someone's going to burn through it in 2 months, they can get $30 for the 2 month subscription, or they can get $75.
Yeah, and you know, you've got that anticipation factor. You've got all the people that are going to run out there and throw their money at ZeniMax and say, give me this game. And they're used to doing that for
for pretty much every game.
Right.
So it's not that big of a hurdle. I think like Guild Wars 2 has a great model where where you have the initial $60 purchase or $50 purchase, I forget. I think it was 60.
It was 60, now it's 50.
Right. So you buy in and then you pay no subscription fee. But, and this is another topic that people are kind of upset about for the Elder Scrolls Online, in addition to the $60 buy-in, the $15 a month, there's also an in-game shop where you can buy stuff.
Mm, yeah. Mm.
So
but that's no different than World of Warcraft.
That is true. However, World of Warcraft has a ton of content. Yeah. Like a decade worth
of content. A decade's worth, that's exactly right.
So
it'll be very interesting to see how this shapes up.
I mean, I think, can I make one final point?
You may.
I think what we haven't talked about yet is the actual game design of free-to-play, and it does change. Like, if you're making a premium download, you don't need to think about how am I going to extract money. You know, if it's $15 a month, you don't need to say, well, should travel be free or should that cost a token and those tokens cost 10 cents? Like, these are the things that have to happen when you change a game to be free to play that, you know, I wrote a big story that a lot of people read about. This is why free to play games sometimes don't feel good. They're not all created equal. I think Lord of the Rings Online, I name drop that game a lot. I really like its free to play model. Other MMOs, I don't like their free to play model. So, I don't know. That's why the subscription fee appeals to me, Justin Davis. Like, whether it was a good business move, I don't know. But for me, I'm happy to spend $15 a month, and then when I'm in the world of Tamriel, in Elder Scrolls Online, I don't need to be thinking about money after that.
But at the same time, like by adding that in-game shop, they kind of take that away from you, don't they?
I mean, it depends on the nature of the in-game shop. Like, right. If it's like WoW, where it's like, you can buy this dumb mount, like, I'm happy to ignore that. You know, or again, like, you know, Lord of the Rings Online, like, I buy the content packs and ignore everything else, and I'm fine with that. Like, it depends.
What about looking at the people who are paying the $60 for the game and then a 15-month as your test group, right? Because what you're talking about is a great point, the fact that there's not going to be that many Xbox Ones, PlayStation 4s out there. However, the people who will have bought those consoles will be the hardcore gamer who know what an Elder Scrolls game means, right? So they buy it regardless of what we think of it at launch because it's Elder Scrolls, they want to get in, they go through, and then they get to point out what they don't want more of, this, that, and the other, and then they get to come out and the developers get to come out and be like, well, we fixed all that and free to play, download the client, no problem, and then just pay us a subscription or whatever.
And then you get your loyal hardcore kind of pissed off that I had to pay $60 to get into this game, and now they're letting any.
But you
any
give them a founder's cape or something in there. Right. Thrilled.
There's already like running jokes. There's like people are starting pools. I'm like, well, okay, how long until Elder Scrolls goes free to play?
Right,
6 months, 8 months, you know, 12 months.
Yeah, will it make a year?
Yeah,
that's the outside chance. Will it make a year?
It's supposed to be out next spring, right?
Give or take. With MMOs, who knows?
Yeah. Sure. For more on the Elder Scrolls Online, stay tuned to IGN GameScoop.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.